Does anybody have any questions? All righty, hold on. Just turn it on, right?
The broadcasts, Reiner and the Pittsburgh Symphony, were fascinating. I'm thinking that Reiner also performed some, I think it was 46 symphony concerts with the so-called Ford Symphony Orchestra, which is members of the Detroit Symphony. Do any of the panelists know if any of those concerts from 35 to, I think it was 42, still survive?
I have found five of them, but they are incredibly hard. That's a holy grail. Somebody has them. I don't know who, but I know somebody who knows who has them, but won't let them go and that sort of thing. I got five of them.
And then there's one from Easter Sunday, 1941.
Yeah, that's one of them.
That's one of them. That was pressed up by RCA for the Ford Motor Company for their employees. That we know exists.
Yeah.
Where the bounce the rest of them are, we have no idea.
Well, I've got other ones, but they're, I wish we could find them all. They must exist.
They said that Reiner got a week's salary for each concert.
They paid well, that's why he did it. Yeah. And the orchestra was very fine. The Detroit Symphony was excellent. On the records, you can tell. Very excellent.
Question for Dennis. When you produced the Reiner recordings for Columbia, did that take much persuasion of management to re-release? And then a question for Mr. Haley. Where did you find all those broadcast descriptions? And last, a comment. This panel's been terrific. Everything from the speaker bios to the discography. This is how things ought to be done at one of these.
Thank you very much.
You all rushed.
We all rushed?
You weren't rushed.
No, we were not rushed. Decidedly not. Intimidated, perhaps, but not rushed. Thank you for the kind words, Lon. In answer to the question about Masterworks heritage, no. Reiner was one of the conductors. I championed Reiner and Rodzinski, chief among all of the orchestral recordings that I had hoped to see reissued, because they were two of the most important conductors active during those decades and who had been very definitely slighted in the decades since. I mean, it's man's fate to be forgotten, but by the same token, there were too many important recordings that could be brought back. Plus, of course, I knew of the quality of the master lacquers, and it was this, I think, that I used to persuade them that the quality that could be achieved on these reissues was orders of magnitude higher than anyone had ever heard before, particularly since the Rodzinski and Reiner products were being offered most recently on Columbia special products with the reverb and 96th generation source. John, you had a question.
Yeah, what was your question about the broadcast?
Where did you find those, and who owns
them? Anywhere I can. The IPAM owns the Capel recording. It's never been released. I was grateful to be able to use an excerpt from it. The 4142s, two of them were recently discovered, as I said, just by sheer accident, sort of, at the Heinz History Museum here, and we recently transcribed them. The others are in a university archive. Al Schlockmeyer and I paid to have them digitized, though, maybe a decade ago, and that's why I have them. There's only a handful of them. I've never found any more.
Yeah.
Who recorded the broadcasts? Was it the station, or is it studio?
That's a good question. I don't think anybody knows that. The two that we recently found were recorded by a home recordist on a machine that recorded all kinds of radio shows on all stations over a six-month period. They just happened to be there. And Seth restored them. They sound pretty good. I had to skip one. But the others, we don't have the slightest clue.
We have no idea.
I just wanted to have one further follow-up to your question about the Ford Symphony Hour. Some of those broadcasts exist on aluminum discs from Reiner's own collection that are now in the Curtis Music.
Those are the ones I have. Oh, I have those.
Okay. I didn't know if you were familiar with them, but you already knew.
Yeah, I've transcribed them.
I really want to thank the panel. This has been of particular interest to me. It was an excellent presentation. I have the privilege of being the current recording engineer for the Pittsburgh Symphony and get to work with this amazing group of musicians every day. And my question is...
That's not an easy job.
Yeah, sit and listen to those guys all day. It's a tough gig, believe me. Though I'm not responsible for the commercial recordings. I am responsible for the broadcast recordings that you'll hear on QED. I'm Harold Chambers, by the way. When did the orchestra start doing their commercial recordings at Heinz Hall?
Dennis?
That would be Jim's.
Well, I got to look it up. Heinz Hall.
Heinz Hall was opened in the early 70s, as I remember.
The Previn recordings starting in 1977 were the first ones in Heinz Hall. So January 14th, 1977 is the answer to your question.
This is a very minor question, but on the last album picture, there over Bruckner's name between the C and the K was a little bird, looked like, and I was just curious what was that was supposed to be, or why it's there.
Anybody up there?
No, go for it.
Okay, in the first movement, the second theme, allegedly Bruckner transcribed from a European bird called the great tit. And I think, why the birds are there. And also, Honeck is known locally for having a strong sympathy for spirituality, as Bruckner was.
I'm glad it's a picture of a bird.
You know, like angels that have wings and so forth, so, yeah. Exactly. I think it's meant to evoke that. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's convenient. So I don't have a question except to say thank you to everyone for all of your presentations. I'm a local and thought that I could just do a quick service. My name is Robert Fallon, and I'm a musicologist over at Carnegie Mellon. And I wanted to mention that very many of these recordings that we heard today and the pictures of them that we saw are available over at in another neighborhood here in Pittsburgh. The neighborhood is called Squirrel Hill. It's at Jerry's Records it's a wonderful place. And in the back of this store, which is full of vinyl, you can find a dedicated PSO section. So I would strongly encourage you, Jerry's Records right here on the t-shirt. I would encourage you to go there if you're interested in picking some of these LPs up. I would also like to just put in a small plug. There's a friend of mine who owns a neighboring store to Jerry's called Amazing Books. He has a store just down Liberty here, and I know that he brought two crates of fairly unusual classical recordings so that you could peruse them. So I would encourage you to walk down a few blocks in the 900 block of Liberty Avenue to Amazing Books and find those records. And finally, I wanted to just plug also that the WQED website has a number of further recordings that can be streamed. So that's all. Thank you.
I may just want to add in a little story here. Dennis and I knew someone. If any of you remember a gentleman by the name of Jerome Goldstein, who played on the Steinberg bass clarinet in the 50s. Great story. He was hired by Steinberg, and he was playing golf in Shenley Park. And Steinberg had a house right behind the park. And one day, Steinberg comes walking out, and he sees him whacking the balls, and he says, "Jerry, do you think you can teach me how to play golf?" So what do you think he said to him? "Well, when you learn how to conduct, you'll know how to play golf." Steinberg looked at me and said, "but I haven't learned how to conduct yet." All right, who's next? All right.
Hi. Just a very quick question for, excuse me, for Tom. And it may be insignificant, but I'm just curious, when you're editing 35 millimeter film, does the precision of the editing depend on the sprocket holes?
As far as I know, there were no edits that Command or Mercury or Everest did that were less than a sprocket hole length. So, but you know, it brings up an interesting question. You can't do those interesting cross edits and all that sort of thing that you can do with tape. But that may be part of the reason why a Command take sheet has so many take numbers on it. Yeah. And now we have the angelic music from above giving us the hook, probably.
Tom's from
Levant. Is it?
Oh.
Oh,
okay.
I'm sure it's not the Steinway B out in the hallway.
For Gary, you showed in your Capitol presentation there was at least one recording of the Pittsburgh International Contemporary Music Festival. And I have actually a recording on the ASCAP label of the Britain Serenade that was part of that. And apparently there were several recordings. Did you encounter those?
I don't have them, but Jim's discography, if you didn't get one of the handouts, they're floating around here. Jim's discography lists all of those ASCAP recordings that were recorded at that festival but not issued by Capitol.
Give it to Dave.
Okay. This is directed to Tom's period that you covered, and just not so much a question as a comment. For me, my favorite Pittsburgh Symphony with Steinberg is the Stravinsky Petrushka. If you're looking for any records by Pittsburgh, that would be the one that I'd say you should own.
That's a good performance. I like that. My regret with Command Classics is that Enoch Light was so conservative about the music that he picked. But you know, he wanted to sell the records, not necessarily build up a fine arts archive. So I would say Petrushka is about as daring as they got, really. Which is too bad, because you know, you see from the Capitol period that Steinberg was very comfortable with modern music, and the PSO was up to playing anything in that era.
Yeah, the song is terrific.
Yes. Yes, and what cool sounds on that.
Thank you all, gentlemen. Well, they do. Okay.